Hosea 1, 1 through 2. The Lord gave this message to Hosea, son of Beeri, during the years when Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah were kings of Judah, and where Jeroboam, son of Jehoash, was king of Israel. When the Lord first began speaking to Israel through Hosea, he said to him, "Go and marry a prostitute, so that some of her children will be conceived in prostitution." This will illustrate how Israel has acted like a prostitute by turning against the Lord and worshiping other gods. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading of His Word.
So I am talking to you guys today about the first chapter of Hosea. And as you can see from just those first few verses, it seems kind of dismal. So the first part of this is probably not, it's going to be difficult, and it's not the most pleasant story, but it's worth it. So stick with me. Hosea's story is a drama that reflects the spiritual tragedy of Hosea's day. God calls him to play the lead in this play that is truer to life than it is to make-believe. The relationship between Hosea, the faithful husband, and Gomer, the unfaithful wife, was a physical human relationship that reflected, represented, and revealed the relationship between God, ever faithful, and humanity, too often faithless. As I said before, this part of the story is not pleasant. It's difficult. Hosea forces us to face the immense gravity of our unfaithfulness to God as we observe the tragedy and the devastation of the husband who is faithful to his adulterous wife. I'm going to read Hosea 1, 1 through 2 again. I'm going to go through the whole thing, and so we'll be reading through the whole chapter today. Hosea 1, 1 through 2 says, "The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel." And now the people of Israel were split into two kingdoms at this time. And that's why I talked about two different kings. So the people of Israel were split into the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel. Not very important for this story, but I just wanted to clarify that. "When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, 'Go, take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord.'" I am using a different version, by the way, than the Bibles we have here. So, God commands Hosea to take a prostitute as a wife for two different reasons. The first one is that so Hosea may know more deeply the intense grief that God feels at the unfaithfulness of his people. And the second one is that so God's people will see more clearly the immense gravity of their unfaithfulness. And what they were actually doing at this time was the Israelites were committing adultery by worship Baal, a false god introduced by the Canaanites. Many Israelites were so steeped in Canaanite culture that they even mistook the god of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as one and the same as Baal. They thought that they were kind of the same thing. They just were not clear. They didn't understand who God was, and they forgot the god that had really carried them all the way since Abraham and the time of Moses, which we're actually going to talk about a bit today. Now we want to talk about that last line, which is kind of a stinger. It says, "For the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." I just want to say he's not talking about the literal land. He's talking about the people. Our relationship with God is likened to marriage over and over again in the Bible. Really, the human institute of marriage is a reflection of the intimacy, love, and commitment that characterizes God's intention for his relationship with humanity. The marriage between us and God is the real marriage that the human institute of marriage is based off of. And so that might be kind of hard to, you know, wrap your minds around. But really, what we see in relationship with a man and woman as marriage is a reflection of the relationship of us and God as marriage. Now, I know especially for you men and probably for you women, it might feel weird and uncomfortable to say that we are married to God or we are the bride of Christ. But the point here is not about the gender of God or our gender or the gender of church. That's not like we just need to kind of leave that behind and instead focus on that intimate relationship that that is marriage. A marriage between two people is the deepest and most personal of all relationships. It is, in its truest and idealist form, the knowing of each other completely, the best and the worst, every single flaw, and accepting the other, knowing full well who they are. And, well, I mean, I'm not married, so that's my guess. That's at the very core of it, though. It's accepting other the person that you're with, even seeing all of the flaws that they have inside of them, and all the things that they are capable of. Unfaithfulness, then, in a marriage is the deepest betrayal, the most intimately crushing wound. When we, those who have committed ourselves to a relationship with God, forsake Him for pride, for satisfaction of unhealthy desires, for ease, comfort, or shame, we betray God, our husband, in the deepest and most intimate of ways. And that's what we see in the story of Hosea. But there's another story in the Old Testament that also reflects this story, and I'd like to share it with you guys. It's found in Exodus 19 through 32. When Moses and the Israelites left Egypt, God brings them to Mount Sinai. Here He calls Moses up to the mountain and gives him the Ten Commandments and the Book of the Covenant. God accepts the Israelites as His own people, fulfilling His promise to Abraham. And now this moment, stick with me here, this moment on Mount Sinai between Moses, who represents the Israelites, and God is like a wedding. God said, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my commandments, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples." They come, Moses and God come together, they share these vows, they make a covenant where God says, "You are going to be mine, and I want to be yours." The Ten Commandments might seem like just a list of rules, but they're really so much more than that. God was showing His people how to enter a deep and beautiful relationship with Him. Because we were made to be in relationship with God. We were always meant to be married to Him. But our relationship with Him is distorted when sin entered the heart of humanity. So when God gives the Ten Commandments and the Book of the Covenant, He wasn't just giving this list of rules for us to obey. He was showing us how we can enter into that marriage with Him. He was redeeming and restoring His people so that they may be in a deeper, more intimate relationship with Him. He was trying to bring them up so that they could be in this marriage covenant. In essence, God vows to the Israelites to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, even beyond till death do us part. And instead of saying, "I take you as my wife," God says, "You will be my people." And I know sometimes we read that, we just kind of gloss over it, but really it is that intimate, that commitment of, "I take you as my wife," God is saying, "You will be my people." This, the most beautiful wedding in history, laid the foundation for a thriving, intimate marriage. But the wedding night was a disaster. Exodus 32, 1 through 8, says that when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, "Up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has happened or what has become of him." So Aaron said to them, "Take off the rings of gold that are in your ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people took off the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made a golden calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord." And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, for your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They've made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt.'" On the very day that God vowed his undying and unconditional love for His people, He comes home to find them in bed with another man. On the very wedding night, the Israelites committed an act of adultery and betrayal. And this happened again and again and again. The Israelites lived in promiscuity, and still the Lord was faithful. Likewise, Gomer continuously slept with other men and even sold her body in prostitution, and still Hosea was faithful. There's a video series that it's kind of funny because it is a dramatic retelling of the dramatic retelling of Hosea. And I just want to watch the first video in the series today, and it just goes through kind of that marriage, the wedding between Gomer and Hosea, and what happens in their marriage. So if you guys could all watch this video. Whew. That always hits me so powerfully. So now I want to read Hosea 1:3-9. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And on that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. She conceived again and bore a daughter. And the Lord said to him, call her No Mercy, for I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. But I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by the Lord their God. I will not save them by bow or by sword or by war or by horses or by horsemen. When she had weaned No Mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, call his name Not My People, for you are not my people, and I am not your God. So Gomer bears three children. The first, Jezreel, is undoubtedly Hosea's child, but it is possible that the second and third child were born out of her prostitution. And each child's name was very significant. The name of the first child, Jezreel, was a prophecy of the fall of Israel to the Assyrians. The second child, Lo Ruhamah, means no mercy or not loved. And this can be really difficult to understand because we think, doesn't God always love us and always have mercy on us? But the thing is that God's love has only one condition. It must be positively responded to. When the Israelites rejected a relationship with God and instead chose to worship false gods, God responded with his judgment. The third child, Lo Ami, means not my people. And the important phrase here, though, is I am not your God. Because God continually adopted the Israelite people as his own, yet they continually turned, spat in his face, and declared, you are not my God. God finally, in his long suffering, turns to the Israelites and says with great sorrow, so be it. But even when the story is at its bleakest, God's faithfulness to the faithless remains steadfast. Hosea 1:10-2:1 says, yet the number of children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, it shall be said to them, children of the living God. And the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together, and they shall appoint for themselves one head. And they shall go up from the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Say to your brothers, you are my people, and to your sisters, you have received mercy. So even in the midst of God's judgment, we see that that is not the plan forever. God is not abandoning his people. Those who received his judgment were going to be redeemed. God promises yet again that Israel shall be prosperous, that he will take care of them and bless them. And those who rejected God and their position as his people were once again welcomed as his children. The division between the Israelites in the North Kingdom and the South Kingdom with Judah and Israel were promised to be reunited and restored. Those who rejected God's love and mercy were once again offered his love and mercy. God responded with judgment to those who rejected and betrayed him, but he never left them or loved them any less. At his time of judgment, God promised restoration and redemption. Whew, so that's all pretty heavy. How are we supposed to respond to that? First, I want to make one thing very clear. We are supposed to identify with the Israelites, not with Hosea. Though I am sure many of you have experienced betrayal, God did not create you to experience that. I don't want you to hear about God's faithfulness and believe that it is your job to remain in unhealthy relationships. God can be faithful to the faithless because he is God. No matter how we might abuse or betray him, it won't destroy him. But if we continue to be in unhealthy relationships, they can destroy us. So I just want to encourage you. There's a lot of nuances when it comes to your relationships with people. And I don't want you to hear, oh, because God is always faithful to somebody who is, you know, betraying him and hurting him and committing adultery against him. I'm not saying that that is your calling as well. Even if you have experienced betrayal, you've also been on the other side. All of us have. We have all placed other things at the center or accepted ungodly things as godly or substituted what we knew to be truth for a lie. We have all prioritized our happiness, our dignity, our wealth, our families, our self-preservation, our opinions, our addictions, our vices, even our offenses over God. The second thing that I want to point out is that God desires intimacy with us, not just obedience. God has taken us as his bride. He's faithful to us in every way that a husband should be, with his time, his devotion, his intimacy, and his love. God does not desire that you simply obey him. No, the creator, sustainer, and redeemer of the universe wants to know you, and he wants you to know him. He loves you unconditionally and is inviting you into a marriage covenant with him. God did not have to make us and love us. God does not need us to be complete. He chose to create. He chose to love, knowing full well what we were capable of and the choices that we would make. In one sense, it's not easy for God to love us. He certainly is more than capable of loving us, but sometimes it is painful for him. Betrayal hurts him to the very core. He grieves. He feels that pain. You see that in Jesus when he sacrificed himself on the cross. It was not a walk in the park for him. It hurt him. And yet he loves us. Not because he has to, but because he wants to. He wants intimacy with us. Third, I want to say, even if you carry pain or shame from your past, and even if you feel like your name and your identity is not loved, God can and will redeem you and claim you as his beloved. There is no act of betrayal, adultery, crime, or unfaithfulness you can commit that will make you any less loved by God. Our understanding of our sin and shame can actually deepen our wonder of God's love for us. Paul says in Romans 5:8 that God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God's love is so imminent and so gracious and so perseverant that he reached out to us in the midst of our deepest shame and took us as his bride. His love is that great. Indeed, there is nothing God can give you that he has not already given you. God is holding nothing back. God does not give his heart piece by piece only when we're worthy. He doesn't hide his face to tease us or guilt us. He is faithful to the faithless. Romans 8:38 through 39 says, "And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from the love from God's love. Neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow, not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or in the earth below, indeed nothing in all creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus our Lord." God's love is unmeasurable. Even in the depths of humanity's betrayal, God pursues an intimate relationship with us. I want us to take a moment before we respond in worship to meditate. In the past week, God has been pressing on me the infinite measure of his love and goodness. And as I dwell on his goodness and love, I find that I am awakened and comforted and just completely awed by him. As I fix my gaze on God, the shame and unfaithfulness of my humanity washes away in the depths of his affection for me. So we're going to listen to a song about the nature of God's love. And as we listen, I just encourage you to meditate on the words. Listen to them. Actually believe them. Let them penetrate your darkened soul with its truth and with its light. You can get down on your knees. You can come to the altar. You can stand and sing if you want to. You can cry. You can even lay down face first on the ground. But whatever you do, let the Holy Spirit overcome you with his loving faithfulness. Let's meditate together.